Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. The holidays are over. It's been a long run, a magnificent run, but it's time to get back to business.
Yeah, you know, it's like the holidays are great. They're fun and all that, but I can tell, you know, it's just like when it goes on too long and it's just like we get too far away from business, you know, our schedules get thrown off, the whole trajectory gets thrown off, everything, you know, you forget what day it is, you don't know what time it is, you don't know, you lose all sense of progress that you've made, and then it's like, okay, finally, we get back to business, settle in, and it's, you know, for most people, it's going to take several days before they actually get into a rhythm, because Thursday and Friday were kind of a waste, because I'm sure most people just still extended the holiday as much as they could, so finally, on Monday, maybe now, we can settle in and get into a routine.
Well, you know that everybody was watching all the ball games. So, you know, not only did you have Christmas and New Year's, it just went on and on. You know, I mean, the good times were here.
Yeah.
People just doing everything in the world. I didn't hear about any last-minute shopping afterwards. I think everybody has shopped themselves to death.
Yeah,
I think they've went too far.
Yeah.
You know, and mine was unorganized this year. Oh. Usually I'm very organized. And different people influenced me, and so the presents weren't all wrapped. Everything wasn't organized, I'm not doing that with anybody again. You know, every year I've always had all the gifts wrapped.
Yeah,
and that's the way to go if you don't have time. You have them wrapped real nice, and you bring them home, and you put them under the tree. That's the way I think it should be done. Now, if you've got a lot of time on your hands, you can spend that 8 hours wrapping gifts.
And it is about 8 hours, too.
It is about 8 hours. And I spent all my time with FedEx, you know. FedEx just running here and running there and kept coming, you know.
Oh, wow.
And then you've got to remember everything you've ordered. Go back and look up all the orders. Say, oh, yeah, I know what that is, you know. And, well, did we get everything? That's the next question.
Oh, yes. You got to go through the list and check off. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And then I changed my menu at the last moment.
Oh, no.
And I'm not doing that again either. I'm determined that this next year, I'm going to have it catered again.
Oh,
you know,
good.
I did that 2 years ago.
Yes.
And and I've talked to more women after the holidays who said, Faye, we worked ourselves to death, and we didn't mean to. I talked to one lady. She said, I did finger foods. I thought that'd be quick and easy. And she said, I'm so tired I can't think. I talked to another lady, you know, and she told me her sad story. And I go, ladies, you know, you've got to change all this. Instead of working yourself to death, you're going to have some of this done for you, you know?
Yeah, it's too much.
And then I discovered something. You know, I buy all these pies at Buttermilk Sky. Well, people didn't seem to be too enthusiastic, so I bought them at Kroger and cooked them. And you know what? I thought it was just fine. I thought it was just fine.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine? I went from Buttermilk Sky, which is wonderful, to Kroger. And I just said, you know, I can do this in a hurry. I'm going to do it.
And you didn't miss a beat.
I didn't miss a beat. So I thought that part was great. But this cooking all day and all night is, you know, we've been cooking how long? Since we were, you know, 15, 14 years old.
Oh, yeah.
Easily. I mean, you know, we always had to help. And then as you grow up, it just keeps going, you know? Well, and it gets more involved.
Oh, yes. We keep adding to it.
And after 40 years or 30 years or whatever, I think it's time to get organized, you know?
You think?
Yeah. After all this time, we need to get organized. Well. And nobody's open on Christmas Day. You know, you could go to a restaurant if there was anybody open.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
it's so weird because when we were getting ready for Thanksgiving, you were like, oh, no, we're going to do this and then we're going to do this and I'm not cooking. And I'm it's like, OK, cool. You know, you go through the turkey place and you pick up everything up and it's wonderful. You're like, I'm going to avoid.
That was wonderful.
No,
I just should have had a place for Christmas, you know.
Yeah, it's like you did the opposite.
I know. And see, on Christmas morning, people are coming. So you've got to make a brunch.
Oh.
You've got to do that, then cook dinner.
Oh,
I mean, you've got two meals you've got to do for a bunch of people.
Yeah. And it's
and
not.
And so.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just. It's a lot of work, folks.
It is. Before you know it, you spent more time in the kitchen for Christmas than you did for Thanksgiving.
And oh, yeah. And then. We hate to mention it, but somebody has to clean all this up. And I was there for that, too.
And, let me guess.
And
you
know,
the
when
only
the
one.
Plates, when it's fine bone china, you cannot put them in the dishwasher.
Oh, no.
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 And so somebody asked me, Faye, do you have plates that can go in the dishwasher? I said, well, we'd have to look on the back of all them, but I know which ones cannot be put in there. Oh, Lord.
Wow. So all the advice that you had for yourself for Thanksgiving all went out the window for Christmas, and it was a disaster.
It was. I mean, it was a big deal. I'll put it that way. It was a big deal.
Wow. Oh, yeah. My word.
So I'm going to get organized. I've got a year to do it. I'm going to get those presents organized. I'm going to get the food organized. Then all I have to do is get the people organized.
Yeah, well, good luck with that one. That'll be the hardest.
I started saying, can you see that happening?
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that'll be like trying to wrangle cats.
That's exactly right, because, you know, people come when they want to.
Oh, yeah.
And when you mention dishes, have you ever seen how you can empty a house?
Who wants to help
dishes.
Clean up?
Yeah, it's time for cleanup. And they say, you know, I have to be going. You know, I will see you later. Get my coat. Get my coat.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
yes.
My goodness. That should, you should almost make them sign like some kind of a thing that says, okay, if you're going to eat it, you're going to clean it.
If you eat, you clean. I love that idea.
Yeah.
But I've never seen it happen.
No.
And I've been around quite a while. I mean, you know, I've watched people.
Yeah. Lord. Yeah, that's the fastest way to empty a house. Let's clean.
Yeah, just say clean up, man. They shoot out of the house.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, my goodness.
They have to go home and take a nap, right?
Yeah.
They've eaten so much, they need a nap.
They'll take half the leftovers with them, but, yeah, they're going to go.
That's right. And so they go home and have the leftovers and laugh.
Yeah.
They go, boy, we made it out of there just in time.
Yeah.
Just in time.
That was a close one. And then they'll probably put together some kind of a plan that one of them will pretend that they're sick next year. And they'll say, okay, the signal is, oh, I don't feel good. And then they'll say, oh, geez, we got to go. You don't want us to be here.
Yeah, my wife is feeling bad. I love that story. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, changing the subject. You know, we talked about the movies that have been made, you know, and they use Fort Worth and Abilene and all these different places for filming.
Yeah.
And this week they've announced tryouts for some more movies going to be made in Fort Worth.
Really?
Yeah, and they're fixing to have tryouts. So there'll be a lot of Texans in this movie, I can tell you.
Wow. So
and I believe it's a Western. I believe it's a Western they're going to do.
Really?
But they're still talking about the movie that was made over here, this Heartland and this other one that was made in Fort Worth. Seems like there was more Fort Worth people are talking about it now, about they were actually in the movie.
You know, I mean, it may be just me, but it seems like there's more and more movies that are being made here than any place else. And I don't know if maybe they're, I don't know, it's the cost of it or if it's just more authentic or I don't know what. But it seems like there's, as we go through time, the more they make, then the more they make here. And so
well, I think we have the land available. We've got the ranches available.
Yeah.
The producer, you know, it was his ranch they used. And it seems like it doesn't. Production costs is way down if you do it in Texas because, you know, we're a right-to-work state. We have no unions. And that affects your film because, you know, you have to abide by their rules. And in Texas, it's wide open. And we've got so many places like the stockyards. You can use that. And they said they've made several movies lately using the stockyards as the backdrop because you've got all, you know, you've got all those steers. And remember, they go down the street every day.
Yeah.
You know, so you can use that in a lot of scenes, all these wild steers going down the road, you know.
Yeah, and it's real. And, it's not even a fake.
It's real. And a lot of tourists, when they come here, that's what they want to see is those steers going down the street in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so it's becoming a destination place. They've got the new hotels down there at the stockyards. That one guy that has that great Mexican restaurant, he closed up the other day. He said, oh, but I'm just moving this down the street to the stockyard. he's been there 30-something years.
Oh, wow.
And so he's moving his location completely. Everybody wants to be in the stockyards. That's where it seems like the action. And downtown.
Yeah.
Downtown, that other new restaurant, and I forgot how big it is, but everybody's raving about it in downtown Fort Worth.
Yeah. Well,
so,
I mean, they don't even have to.
A lot of stuff is coming to this area.
It is, and it's natural. It's not like, you know, because I guess if you do it in Hollywood or wherever, you've got to build a set and you've got to do. But if they just, like, come into town, then it's already right there. They don't have to even fake anything. They don't have to build anything or create sets. It's all, like, naturally right there. So, and then the other thing.
Well, you remember Dallas, the movie, it was produced here for years and years. And they had that big house and that land out there, and they had a lot of room for it. And that's one thing about Texas. We've got so many land usages in small towns that a lot of them go back in the 1800s and 1700s, and the houses look the same. You know, I'm always seeing these Victorian houses. Victoria, Texas has some beautiful Victorian houses, and they use a lot of these as the backdrops. You know, for all these movies.
Yeah, and they're authentic and real. And that's the great thing. It's just like, you know, you know how I love architecture. And just to see those things exactly the way they were, you know, a couple hundred years ago, still now standing, it's just, for me, that's just fascinating to me. And to be able to bring that to life on screen just makes it even better. So I
think
it's awesome.
You know, they have cowboys in these movies, and the cowboys are real here.
Yeah.
You know, they really wear boots all the time. They really wear Levi's. And they have the hats, you know? I mean,
yeah.
It's real here.
I mean, geez. Yeah, sometimes you take, like, these Hollywood stars, and you've seen them play lawyers or doctors or whatever, and then you try to make them up like a cowboy in a movie. You can kind of tell that it's not authentic. And, you know, it's like, if you got the real thing, why not? You know, it's just, it's better.
Well, you know, I saw a late movie the other night, and this cowboy had his hat pulled down so low he couldn't hardly see out. I said, cowboys don't wear their hats like that. You know, they don't wear them down like that.
No.
They wear them up, you know. I thought some guy got him to do that and didn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. They said, hey, let's pose this way. And let's, well, to make it look cool. It's like, no. It's you may be cool, but you're not authentic and it's a joke.
That's right. And, you know, I never heard cowboys talk like a lot of them do. You know, they use such bad language. And I thought, you know, I used to know a few cowboys, and I never heard them say that in public like that.
No. Uh-uh.
You know, they didn't talk like that. Out on the range, they probably talked like that, but they didn't around polite company.
Well, yeah, I mean, they have some manners still, and sometimes in Hollywood in movies, they make it look just, you know, so rough and unnecessarily just nasty, I guess, and I don't know why. Maybe it makes it exciting or fun or something. I don't know, but it's not real. That's for sure.
It's not real. I mean, They need to take some lessons from some real Texans is what they need to do.
Yeah, they need to spend some more time actually in Fort Worth, kind of like observing people and, you know, kind of adapt to reality instead of making this exciting whatever it is fakeness in Hollywood. And, you know, the tourism, the more they do in Fort Worth, the more tourism is going to come because people are going to want to see those actual places, which means that, you know, there's going to, and maybe there are already, I don't know, but there's going to start to be like Hollywood tours in Fort Worth, which is something you've never seen before. So I'm sure
things
like that. No,
we've never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
But the visitors to Fort Worth are becoming huge, huge visitor population because there's so much to do over there. You know, you've got the two museums that are wonderful. You've got the botanical gardens. You've got the huge zoo there. There's just a lot of things historically, you know, and if everybody goes down to the stockyards, they're going to learn a lot about Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, just you know, culture, and then just, you know, things that have been around for hundreds of years, and for, you know, that helped shape the state, you know, for what we are and all that. So it's not even just about, you know, oh, well, let's just drive through and see something and take a picture. It's really about absorbing like the whole culture and all that. There's so much involved with it, so. I'm not surprised that it's becoming a bigger and bigger destination for people.
Well, and you know that they're fixing to have a stock exchange in Dallas, Texas.
I know, right?
I mean, I am so shocked. I mean, I'm still reeling from this. The stock market will open in 26.
Wow. So we're
can you imagine in Dallas, Texas, a stock exchange?
I
think I'm dreaming. I'm not sure this is really real. Right?
Yeah, it's like,
I mean, they've never let anybody get by with this, and Texas is bringing it to Texas.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's how it should be. It's we are self-sustainable, and so it's
that's
just
exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And can you imagine if they can trade stocks right here?
Yeah.
I think it'll be a better process, and I think it'll be a lot more honest than dealing in New York City.
Oh, gosh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, the stories I hear about those are not always good, I mean, you know.
I always love when you break out with a good stock exchange story, though, because it's like we can't believe how they stole how much in how little time.
You know, they were talking about Bernie Madoff this week.
Oh, geez.
And in the $65 billion scam. And did you know that the people with his last checks, they're getting their last checks after all these years, and they're going to be 94% whole?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They're going to get the last of their money.
After all this time.
After all this money. It's taken, how many years has it been?
Oh, my gosh. Way too many, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's taken a long time, but they're going to get most of their money back.
I can't
believe. After what, 10 years?
Yeah.
15?
I'm shocked, actually,
that
they're getting as much back as they are. I'm a little surprised, but, you know, God bless them. Because most of the time, you know, when things like that happen and they're on that kind of a scale, you know, good luck getting your money back or even a fraction of it. So the fact that they're like 94% whole is kind of a surprise to me. So they're lucky.
Yeah, I didn't know they were going to get that much back. But it's taken, I don't know how many years, it's been a long time. But it was, they announced it this week that these last checks are going to get them up to 94%.
Oh, wow. Jeez. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is
877-588-3330. 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
Yeah, just thinking it's always nice to start the new year with a fresh scandal. Even though this is an old scandal, it's kind of coming to an end.
So, well, at least it's almost over.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of them since then, but this was, they say, was the biggest in history.
Yeah. I mean, that was historic. I mean, everybody knows the name Bernie Madoff, so.
And it took them a long time to find out about it. That's what's so amazing.
Yes. And there was a bunch of celebrities that got wrapped up in this, too, I think.
Yes, there was a lot of celebrities. There was some banks that got involved. A whole bunch of stuff happened. And all of them had to settle because, you know, he was using those banks as his dropping off place, you know. So they got involved and they had to pay back.
Wow.
And there was just a lot of people that he involved, and he would pay them, and then they would tell everybody they were making all this money when they really weren't.
Yeah.
You know, that was part of the deal. And it was a long, long deal.
Yeah. I'm surprised that it's actually coming to a close. I never thought we'd
see
this.
And they gave him their money and gave it to him.
Wow. Just handed it over.
Handed it over. And they weren't going to get it back, and they weren't going to get the interest on their money. But they didn't know that at the time.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that was probably one of the most historic Ponzi schemes that there ever was.
Whew. Yeah, and I don't know how he pulled it off. I'll never figure that out.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, sometimes these people get in with people, and it's almost like it's kind of like people who are famous just for being famous. It's like it doesn't really make any sense. It just kind of morphed into this thing, and then, you know, by the time it's all said and done, by the time it's thriving, he's somehow built up trust with people who know other people and vouch for it, and it just becomes this giant game where things aren't, I guess, maybe necessarily checked or thoroughly investigated. And it's like, oh, well, so-and-so says it's fine, so here you go. And then they just kind of like, it's almost like the whisper game. And then before you know it.
Well, what was that other one that was recent, that XTX?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's going to be big, but it won't be this big, of course.
Yeah.
But this young kid figured all this out. You know, he was just a kid. What was he, 20 years old, 23?
Yeah, super young.
Super young. And he did this to millions of people. And I think it was it 300 million? Was it more than that?
I don't know, but it was, I don't remember the exact final number, but yeah, it was huge. I mean, a huge amount of money. Just the kind of thing that makes you think to yourself, how in the world? I can't even fathom that that kind of cash that he got from people. And it's just, I don't know.
And was it a crypto deal?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking it was a crypto deal of some kind.
Yeah, and it's just, it's one of those things that, you know, I guess maybe, you know, people wanted to get on the bandwagon of you know, the next big shiny object. And then, you know, because there's a bunch of celebrities that have also got into crypto. And so they're, I guess, maybe talking about it and feeding into the whole excitement and the thrill of it. And, you know, you've always been one that's been saying, you know, I'm not really sure about this crypto.
Yeah, I'm a little bit cautious about that.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand it. And if you don't understand it, you shouldn't do it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people got wrapped up in the mystery of it.
Yeah, and a lot of it's real, and some of it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
They're finding more and more people that invested in it, and their money's gone.
Yeah.
Their money's, it's just not here. It's not ever coming back.
Yeah.
And they've lost their life savings, and that is so scary that you could lose your life savings that, on those investments.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and the crypto just, it can disappear on you if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, some people are so wrapped up in mysterious, fun, new, exciting things, and they're going to get out in front, and they're going to get on the ground floor of this new, you know, exciting thing. But really, when it comes down to it, when you're talking about, like, your money, you don't want to play too many games. At least most people don't want to play too many games. I mean, if you want to play a little bit, okay, sure. But if you can afford to lose it, fine. But most people, I would imagine, want to take a route that they know is not going to be quite so risky with some newfangled thing that doesn't make sense to a whole lot of people. So that's why I think what you're doing with Life Settlements is so effective. I mean, it's not exciting. It's not one of these new, hey, look at this exciting, shiny new object, but it works. And you've been doing it for so long. It's conservative, and people over time have always made money, and you don't hear about the scandals in Life Settlements like you do with other things.
Well, did you know that also there was some places online that you could bank. And my son got involved in that, and he just lost his money in it.
Really?
Yeah, he put some money in his online bank deal, and they went out of business, and it's gone.
No, really? What?
And I didn't even know about it. He just told me about it the other day, that it was one of these online banking deals, you know, that you could do, and he put some money with them. And then he was informed this last week that it's gone bye-bye.
Oh, wow. Was it like a new bank that popped up with, like, all strictly online and no brick and mortar?
Yeah, it was just an online deal, and you could put your money there and do things with it, and they were going to pay you interest and all this. And, of course, it wasn't insured, wasn't anything.
Oh, no.
And I don't even know where it was out of. He didn't tell me. I didn't get the full details, but... they were sorry to inform him they went out of business.
Wow. And no chance to get his money back at all. It's gone.
No, there's no way.
Oh, geez.
Because it wasn't regulated.
Wow.
You know, if it had been regulated, it might could have done something. But it wasn't regulated.
That is so
scary.
It's
one of those little deals. Somebody decided to go in business and went in business and got all the deposits, and now they're gone.
Wow. Oh, no. I'm sorry to hear that. Golly.
I was too, and I don't know how much he had it with him. I hope it wasn't much.
Yeah, I hope not. I'm sure that was probably very difficult for him to tell you of all people.
To even tell me they lost his money. You know?
I'm sure had he run that by you ahead of time, you would have probably said, stay away from this. Don't go anywhere near that.
Yeah, I'd have said, don't touch it. It's not regulated. But the United States of America, you know?
I mean, but he went rogue.
Wow.
Oh, no. Wow. I'm sorry to hear
so
that.
So anyway, now talking about life settlements, I'm glad we do life settlements. We've learned a lot. You know, we started out a long time ago. We were new to the business. We had to learn a lot of lessons, which we have. We've gotten better and better at it. You know, the LEs now are coming in mainly on time. Very few of them are late. We did have some that were late because the LEs weren't as good as they should have been. The people weren't as sick as we thought, and now they are absolutely as sick as we say. We know they are because the LEs are backing it up. We're having lots and lots of maturities, and people are making money, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah. And people don't have to worry about losing their principal. They don't have to worry about, you know, all of a sudden get some notice. We're sorry to inform you. And, you know, and it's one of those things where people can sleep at night. They know their money is it's safe because it's with a life insurance company. So, you know, there's a lot of safety features and things for people to not worry about, I guess.
And we've tightened up security on them.
Yeah.
You know, more and more, when we find out there's anything that needs to be tightened up, we have done it. And that's the way it should be. And that's why we use Nevada Trust as the trustee on everything we do. So we've got several layers that we can rely on to make sure their money is safe.
Yeah, and when people are looking at, I guess, maybe options of things to invest in, you know, some people obviously going to go for the stock market. A lot of people do. Some people go for crypto. A lot of people do. But all of those have options of literally there's a possibility of the next day waking up and you have nothing left. And with a life insurance company, you don't have to worry about that. With life settlements, you're principal is protected, and it's all safe and secure, and it's all regulated. And so you've been doing this for so long, the people who have been in the most policies for the longest amount of time are the ones that are thriving. And there are people that, you know, are concerned that at some point what goes up must come down. So the stock market may bust at some point and there could be a serious crash. You never know. I mean, sometimes these things are not predicted. But throughout history, anytime something like that happened, anybody in a life settlement has never had to worry. They've never missed a beat. They've still made money. They're thriving. They don't have to worry. It's been very, very consistent over the years.
Well, and you know, one thing about it, when you're in the stock market, you know, today you made a lot of money and tomorrow you may lose it all.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking 2 weeks ago about how it went up that day and people made a lot of money. And since then, you know, it's went way down.
Yeah.
So you have to deal with that on a daily basis, the ups and downs, and you never know which way it's going to end up. You know, when you start to retire, is it up and you're going to get all your money plus all your profit, or is it down and you're not going to get all your profit back?
Yeah, it's so literally.
That's a big worry as you get older, is keeping your money safe, making sure you've got enough to retire, and make sure it's made some money. One of my clients told me that their interest on their account this year with us was $250,000.
Wow, that's just the interest?
That's how much interest they made with us this year.
Wow, that's awesome. That is fantastic.
When they told me, I said, holy cow, that's great. I mean, you know, I didn't realize there's that much. And I was really thankful that they'd made that kind of money this year.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and you can't say that. There are no, I don't know, I don't want to say guarantees, but there are no safety nets, maybe, in the stock market. It's literally a financial game of Russian roulette. You know, it may thrive, like you said, may thrive one day, and then it may pancake the next. And so it's this game of, you know, gosh, do we want to, you know, get in? Do we want to get out? Do we want to sell? Do we want to buy? Do we want to, you know, it's just all this movement, this thing, and none of it is predictable. The good thing about life settlement is, I don't want to say predictable, but it is a very well-informed investment. You know, you have the LE, you have all the data, you know approximately when the policy is probably going to mature, you know exactly how much you're going to make, you know about when you're going to make it. And so I don't think there's another investment opportunity out there that has that kind of information, at least from what I can think of.
Well, and another thing, how many companies that have investments use a trustee to guard the money?
Yeah.
Most people, you invest, and when you make out the check, it's made out to that company. It's not made out to a trustee. I'll bet there's not three companies in the United States that use trustees to protect your money.
Mm. Yeah,
and, all the ones I know, you make it out to a John Blow company. You know, you don't make it out to a trustee that handles the money and guards your money for you.
Yeah.
Because they work for you and us. And their job is to keep your money safe, to do the investing when we tell them what you want to put it in. They handle the premiums. They handle everything. And they've been with us since the start. Do you realize that?
Wow, that's a long time.
They've been with us a long time. And they've been in business a long time. And they're a very reputable company. And they have really great relations with our clients. You know, you can always call them. You can always talk to them. And the other thing someone told me the other day, a doctor that's been with us a long time, she had some questions. So she called and asked me, she said, I know you'll always talk to me.
Mm.
And I'll talk to any client at any time.
Yeah.
You know, that's my job. And I know when you're dealing with a brokerage house, you don't talk to the head person.
Mm-mm.
You talk to some stockbroker. You don't get to talk to anybody that really counts.
Well, yeah, and speaking of that, you know, when you're talking to a stockbroker, isn't it in their interest to move things around, to buy and sell and trade? It's not necessarily.
That's what they do for a living.
Yeah.
They buy, they sell. A lady was telling a story the other day on the internet that this broker called her, took her to dinner, wined and dined her and all this, and she lost a lot of money because, you know, and she trusted him. And she gave him all this money, and he made some bad investments. And all they say, if they make a bad investment, lose your money, is, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The stocks weren't any good.
And,
you know, we didn't do a good job.
Wow. And there's no recourse.
We're sorry. There is no recourse.
Wow. That is a shame. You know, you hate to hear about things like that, but, you know, it happens all the time. They're making moves that are not necessarily in the investor's best interest. It may be in the broker's best interest, you know, because that's how they make their commission and all, but not necessarily in the investor's best interest. And with a live settlement, there's none of that. All that is gone. There's no buying and selling and trading and moving. And, you know, it's you're in, and then the policy matures and you get paid, and you know that you're going to get paid because they have the reserves on hand. That's a regulation. So
that is, and they are so regulated. You know, they're regulated so much more than the stock market. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah. And people have thrived off that. That's why it's been so consistently good. You know, if something were to happen, say on Monday, and the stock market crashed, say all the markets around the globe crashed, you wouldn't have to worry about your life settlement because it's in, like we said, the life insurance company. They have the reserves. The policy will always pay the full amount. They're never going to discount it. Well, you know, the market isn't so good in China, so we're only going to pay 70%. Of this particular policy. That's not even a thing. It's always going to be 100%, and so people in life settlements don't have to worry. What about annuities? Are those bonuses still intact into the new year?
Yes, they are. They have kept the bonus. You know, we thought they were going to get rid of it, and we were scared to death. They did keep the bonus. We've got the bonus. It's a new year. People are looking for solid investments. Depending on their age, you know, annuity might be the place to go. And our annuities are the best. I look at every annuity in the world. I think that the companies we use are the best. I know they're the oldest. They're over 100 years old. You know, they're worth $60 billion, some of them.
Wow.
Some of them are worth, you know, just a gigantic amounts. And I love that it's tax deferred. I love it that you don't pay taxes till you start taking it out. But there's so many good things about annuity, and it's all in indexes. If you've been reading them at all in the paper or online, the richest people around are doing indexes. They're not doing mutual funds. They're not doing stocks. They're doing indexes.
And these are fixed.
And a fixed index annuity.
Wow.
And I think it's the safest way to go. It depends on what your risk tolerance is. If you've got 1,000% risk, stay where you are. But if you're saying, you know, we're getting older, when we retire here, we want to be sure our principal's safe, that it's not going anywhere. Annuity is the place to be. You get that first-year annuity rate right now of the 13%, plus whatever it makes. If it makes another 6, 7, 8%, you've really done something.
Yeah.
And then every year for 3 years, if you add more money to it, they'll give you that 13% bonus, plus whatever it makes.
Plus, it's compound
interest.
You've
got a lot of choices. You've got more choices than the stock market.
Yeah. What, 13, 14?
I say that. I mean, there's a lot of choices, in other words.
Yeah. I mean, you've got, is there 14?
I think there's about 14 different choices.
Yeah.
And you can do one-year strategies. It locks your interest in at the end of every year. And you can't say that about the stock market. It's not going to lock in your interest for the year.
Mm-mm.
There is no lock on it.
No.
And this locks it in. It also keeps it from going down. If the stock market goes down, it has a lock on that. It will not go down. It may stand still, but it won't go down. And if the stock market goes up, it mirrors it. It's not in the stock market. If the stock market goes up, the index will go up and it will pay you.
Yeah. It's almost like
the best of both worlds. You can also do a two-year index. You can do 2 years. A lot of people are trying the two-year index out.
Is it?
And that takes, it takes it over a two-year period and averages it out.
Do you have a preference between the 1 year or 2 year, or doesn't it, it just kind of depends on the investor?
I think it depends on who it is and how they need their portfolio to go.
All right, but there's advantages either way. It's the same concept. You have that stopgap. You still have the same.
You have that stopgap to keep you from losing money.
Yeah,
and that's really important.
Yeah, so I guess if people like the excitement of the stock market, but not the risk, annuities are the way to go.
Well, and it depends how much you know about the stock market. How much do you know about how they're investing your money? Are you sophisticated enough to be in the stock market? Are you just throwing it at the wall and saying, go for it, whatever you think? And they say, well, we've got this timber in Africa we'd like to put you in.
Okay.
You know, we've got something in Peru that you're going to love.
Wow.
You know, it's up in the Andes Mountains.
Haven't you talked to quite a few people who have come over from the stock market? And you're like, well, you know, what's your money in? And they can't tell you. They don't know. They have no idea.
I have asked people many times. I said, well, bring me in your statement. Let me look at it. And I'll say, well, what about this and this and this? And they say, I don't know. I don't know. and they don't understand what all they've got them in. Wow. And lots of times, and we've told this story a million times about the lady in Houston. The doctor died, and she came to me and wanted to change everything over. And when I got to looking at it, we couldn't do it. I said, you're locked in for 25 years on REIT.
Oh.
They've invested in office buildings.
Oh, no.
And you cannot get it out. You know. And she couldn't get the money that she needed.
Yeah.
So it depends if you're going to tie up the money forever, if you want to be able to access it, or what your plans is, what's your game plan for retirement.
Yeah.
You know?
I would imagine probably when she got into or probably even for many people, when they got into REITs, it's like maybe, you know, it was thriving and you can't always tell. Okay, well, in 20 years from now, you know, it may bottom out and it may not be going very well in a couple of decades when I can start to take it out and get to it. And so
that's I cannot imagine that a person would invest for 25 or 30 years in an office building if you're going to need it before then. It depends your age. If you're 30 years old, sure, you don't need it. You could do a REIT. But if you're 60 years old, that's not a good place to be in a REIT that's not going to mature for that many years. And some of the REITs, when these office buildings went down, the interest went to nothing.
Yeah.
You know, they can't guarantee that interest if the office building empties out.
And then think about it. You know, the same person who is, say, in their 30s and they're thinking about a REIT or something like that, and they have all this time, you know, for something to go wrong. They have some wiggle room and all that to adjust. But if they were in a life settlement over that same period of time, they would be in a number of different policies that would have matured, reinvest in new policies, mature, reinvest in new policies, and their portfolio would hopefully be well diversified. And imagine the consistent conservative money that they could have made in the same amount of time in a life settlement. So,
that's right.
You know,
and you know, conservatism are wide open. You know, everybody's got to make that choice.
Yeah.
You know, how conservative are you? Most wives are pretty conservative, but usually the husband handles investing. And as I've said many times, they forget to tell the wife how it really works, how their money's being used. But they should know if the husband is happy with his investments, that they should leave it alone and go right along and learn how to do it.
Yeah, yeah, kind of be somewhat informed about what's happening. So
yeah. And, of course, if you've got it in the market and your husband passes away, they're just going to continue however they want to because they know you don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And they may be successful. They may do a great job.
Sure.
You know? But the ones that don't could cost you a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing you want to do is be in your 70s and then have to go back to work because, you know, of something that's out of your control. That's a scary place to be.
And, you know, and people talk about gold.
Ooh.
But, you know, you've got, in order to realize something out of that gold, you have to sell it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't just, if you're just holding it and saying, well, it's worth all this money, and you suddenly need some money, you've got to sell it. You've got to pay the broker, and you've got to take all that in account.
Yeah.
What do you have to pay them to sell it?
Mm-hmm.
How much is it worth then?
Yeah, you won't get the full value, no matter what.
No,
so.
Because remember, it's a retail deal. They sold it to you at retail. They did not sell you that gold at wholesale, I can assure you of that.
Yep, yep.
And you should check all that before you do it. Say, okay, now, when I get ready to sell this, I've paid you up front, and then I have to pay you on the back? Yes, you do. Find out how much it is.
Yeah, and I would imagine that probably people don't always look all the way through to the end. And then when it comes time to sell, they're a little bit shocked at maybe what they're not going to make off of it. So it could be an eye-opener, and it's too late.
Because, you know, we talked about that one guy that his wife said she's going to divorce him if he didn't sell it and get over to my place.
And I have a feeling she
lost $45,000.
Oh, wow, that's brutal.
And that's a terrible thing to happen.
Oh, my word. Yeah, so a lot of options. It just depends if you want to be conservative, you want to make sure that your principle is protected, or if you want to completely, you know, fly out there on your own. So, you know, if this is the way that you want to be, kind of conservative, then annuities or life settlements, the way to go. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com. Has a lot of good things about annuities, about life settlements, and has references on it, and you should go and check it out.
And every Saturday around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic today?
We're going to talk about A&M University.
Oh, fantastic.
I love A&M. You know, it's a great college. A lot of things people probably don't even know about. Do you know that in 1862, Congress passed the Morrill Act, which auctioned land grants to public lands to establish colleges?
Really?
And A&M was the first one. It's the first college that we had in Texas.
I didn't know that.
Yes. And when they started out in 1876, that day, October 2nd, only six kids enrolled in the first day. They said, well, this isn't going too well. So on October the 4th, they had six faculty members and 40 students.
Oh, wow.
And you know, it's the largest military school in the United States. Did you know that?
Is it really?
It's the largest. Now, what do you think today the enrollment is at Texas A&M?
Oh, my gosh. No matter what I guess, I'm going to look like a fool. So I'm going to say I don't know.
72,000 kids.
Really? Wow.
It's the largest enrollment in any school in the United States.
Wow, that's huge. I wasn't going to guess.
And they also, now have a school in Qatar and a smaller place in Israel.
Really?
And that's how big they really are. Now, what do you think the endowments are?
Oh, my gosh. I don't even know.
The endowments are billions of dollars.
Really?
Not millions. Not millions. Billions.
With a B.
I believe it's $19 billion now.
Really?
Yeah. Well, you see what people don't realize. The people that have went there all have done so well in life. I mean, they have become very wealthy, wealthy people, and they love A&M, you know. And so they've went back and given, and they've endowed it where it will be taken care of the rest of their life. And it's just amazing to me that it's $19 billion. I mean, we talked about the University of Texas. You know, we thought it had a great deal going, but it's so much more than any college I've ever heard of.
Wow.
And they have 508,000 people that have graduated from A&M.
Really?
508,000.
Oh, my word.
Can you imagine?
I thought
now, during war, and I didn't know this, I looked it up, and during World War I, they had more people enroll in the war. 49% of the Aggies were all in the war.
Really?
And in September 1918, the entire senior class enlisted.
Wow. The entire class.
The entire class. And as you know, back then, they didn't even allow girls in the university.
Yeah.
And even if you went, they would not give you a degree. These twin sisters went there, and years and years and years later, they finally gave them a degree. I mean, they had graduated, but you didn't get a degree.
Wow.
And then during World War II, they had 20,000 trained combat troops for our military.
20,000.
And 14,000 of them were officers, more than any other school.
Really?
More than the Navy Academy and the military academies. And it's amazing. At the end of World War II, most of them, not only were officers, several of them came out as generals.
Wow. That's big. That's a big deal.
is a really big deal. And I'd forgot about that. And I remember when they said, you know, during that time, they finally fixed them where they had running water, and then they built all the dorms for them finally, you know. And, of course, a membership in the Corps back then was, well, you had to become a member of the Corps. And then it became voluntary in 1963, where you did not have to join the Corps. But it's amazing to me, you know, all the things that happened at A&M over the years. Not only, you know, there's 130 things you can study now at A&M.
Really? 130? I didn't know. I didn't know it was that many. I don't know why, but...
And the two of the guys that graduated became presidents of Bolivia and Panama. You had Rick Perry, who, you know, served as Secretary of Energy, and he was governor. And, you know, and he ran for president in 2012.
Yeah.
We had Louis Goldmark is also a graduate. William Paley, he became famous. Michael Folsom, Folsom Companies. Stephen Swanson, and some of these guys, you know, became astronauts. Some of them were Heisman Trophy winners in sports, you know. And, of course, Clayton Williams, you know, he loved A&M. And he talked to A&M. I think they all said they bled red, white, and blue, or the colors, you know, the maroon and white.
Yeah.
But many famous people have graduated from there. And as I said, the endowments now that these people that were so successful has given back is $19 billion.
Wow. I'm just sitting here going from picturing like six kids in 1876 to... $19 billion in endowments. I can't even. It's just. It's hard to picture how far that actually has gone from day one to now. It's just.
Oh, and yes, and the president of Qatar, he went. He graduated from A&M.
Jeez, wow.
And there's 120 countries represented at A&M.
Really,
that's how special this place is. Let's see, James Rutter. He was the 16th president of the college, and they did a lot of things. They've got a statue of this guy that was famous, a Confederate guy, Lawrence Ross. He was governor of Texas. He was former Confederate brigadier general. And, you know, he did all this, and they put a statue up. Well, these bad people about 4 or 5 years ago, they tried to take a statue down.
Oh, my.
And A&M said that ain't going to happen on our watch.
Mm-mm.
You know, said, you know, you might do these crazy things somewhere else, but not A&M.
Wow.
And, yeah. And, you know, they've got the 12th man. And I don't know if you know what that means. The 12th man does the yells, the cheers, and all this. And now when it's at home... Everybody stands the entire game.
Cool.
Did you know that?
Yes.
yeah, they stand the whole game. It's just amazing, you know, all the things they've done there.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking about all the people that you're naming off who've graduated. I would say it's fairly safe to say that people who graduate from A&M have gone on to do great things. Probably... quantity-wise, percentage-wise, saturation-wise, probably more graduates from A&M have done big things than any other single university.
I think they have, because they've all it's so hard. The studies are so hard there. You've got to really be somebody.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get into. You can't just walk in and say, I'd like to go. It doesn't work that way at A&M.
Uh-uh.
Now then, the Aggie War Hymnal dates back to World War One, and I didn't know
really that far.
In 1918, Pinky Wilson, class of 1920, wrote the lyrics to the song on the back of a letter from home. He was a Marine sitting in a trench during a battle in France.
Wow.
And wrote the song. Can you imagine?
I can't. I'm trying to picture that right now, and it's just,
It's amazing to me, and I didn't know it all these years. He wrote the Aggie War Hymnal while in a trench in France.
It's awe-inspiring to me. I just can't.
I mean, the people that go to A&M are really special people.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not just run-of-the-mill. I think they're the best of the best that go to A&M.
Yeah, special people who've gone on to do special things, historic things, big things. So all of it for the positive.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine? They have 12,000 professors there.
Wow.
12,000.
That's just, I'm just, yeah, wow. And originally they started with six kids.
Started with six, couldn't even get them, hardly. I mean, nobody showed up. Can you imagine how bad that'd be?
Wow.
And, of course, you know, they gave them that 2,500 acres, but they have over 5,000 acre campus.
Jeez.
That's like a city.
Yeah, it is.
It's like a city. It's so big.
I'm just, well, but that's fitting to what we do. Everything's bigger and better. So,
that's right. And to start with, they wouldn't even let girls go there, of course, because it's a military college.
Yeah.
And then finally, they would let them go during the day. I mean, they were given a little at a time. They said, but we're going to let you graduate, but you're not getting any papers showing it. You know, we're not going to do that. But we'll let you go to the school if you're good. And all this, but you don't get anything else.
Small baby steps.
That's right. And finally, they became co-educational and never looked back. But look how many years it was just a boys' military school.
Wow. It just gives us a whole new perspective on the history behind probably one of the greatest universities.
World War One, World War Two, the whole class went.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? The entire class went to war.
That's just it's awe-inspiring. Just to think about it, to put yourself in those shoes. Just every single member went. It's just that's honor right there is what that is. So
well, and it tells what the class of people that went to A&M.
Yeah,
and I think this is it. The people that go to A&M are way above the average.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and. To pass the test there, you've got to be good because, remember, they have a lot of foreign teachers.
Yeah.
And you better be using a tape recorder.
Yeah.
Because you may not understand what they're saying in class.
Yeah. You may have to interpret it later.
That's right. I know someone who learned the hard way. They were at A&M and failing.
Yeah.
And got a call from the dean. The parents got a call from the dean. And the dean said, they're not going to be able to stay here if they don't get it.
Wow.
And the whole problem was they didn't know what they were saying.
Yeah. Oh,
and they said, well, you better start taping it, and you better get on it now.
And they did.
And they did. And so A&M is the best of the best.
No doubt. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
All right, real quick, with a life settlement, there are two risks. What is the first one people need to know?
The first one is it could go over. If it does, you will have to have premiums, and that we would tell you what it is up front. It would be on your papers. It used to be on page 14. Now it's five pages from the end. But it tells you everything about your investment, tells you what the face amount of the policy, what your investment is, what your profit is, if it goes over what the premiums are. Everything you need to know is on that page. Hmm. It's always included.
All right. And the second risk?
The second risk is it is not liquid till it matures. Remember that.
Okay.
So you can't take the money out in the middle of a program.
But considering people have to be accredited, it's not that big of a deal. So what does it mean to be accredited?
You must be accredited. And to be accredited, you must make $200,000 a year, or you must be worth $1 million, and that is without your home.
Okay. It is business as usual this week. Finally, back to regular schedule.
We're back in business, folks.
So if people want to call, talk to you, get some information, get started, wherever they are, they do need to make an appointment. One last time, Faye, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. 3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.